Welcome to the Latin Tutor Podcast. If your child is struggling in Latin, then look no further. My name is Emma Williams, and I'm here with practical tips and strategies to help you to help your child. Or maybe you're a teacher, wondering about the best approaches to the trickiest concepts in this unforgiving subject. With my 21 years as a teacher of Latin, as well as a private tutor, I've got a lot of experience to share with you. So if you're ready, incipiamus. Let's begin.
It's the idea that I'm going to teach the ablative absolute in Latin. I mean, that is just bonkers, isn't it? I mean, it's hard enough to teach it in English.
John Taylor needs no introduction in the world of Latin teaching. It would frankly take too long to outline his experience and expertise as an examiner, as a teacher, as an academic, and as an expert in the pedagogy of ancient languages. Suffice to say, most of us know him as the author and co-author of volumes which have become a veritable New Testament of guidance and reference when it comes to the teaching of Latin and of Greek at GCSE and at A-level. Like most people who are true experts in their field, he is remarkably generous with his time and agreed readily and enthusiastically to appear on this podcast. He even claims to remember me from the times we've met before. I get the impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that your lifelong passion isn't so much classics in general, but the teaching of classical languages. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, it's become more that, I think. Classical civilization at GCSE, classical civilization at A-level, ancient history at A-level. With all of those, I never found it as rewarding as a teaching experience as teaching languages. And I think it's really to do with a very fundamental thing about sort of what you actually do in the lesson. Now, I mean, the languages are interactive intrinsically. Translate that sentence. What does that mean? Why is that nominative? Whatever. With classical civilization, I never really solved the problem what you actually do in the lesson because, you know, I mean, they can't read the whole Odyssey in lesson time. They've got to go away and do it. You can discuss it, but can, you know, a large class of 14-year-olds really discuss in quite that sense? Basically, I mean, the temptation is just to sort of lecture them. But I mean, obviously, you mustn't let yourself do that. They've got to be doing something. But once you've read the play, what do you do next? I mean, obviously, you know, you muddle through. I never got really a very satisfactory resolution of that. Whereas with the languages, from the first page and you know, from day one, really, I mean, you don't have to think about things like that because it's kind of there in the material. I don't know, it's maybe just me, but I just much prefer teaching the languages.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, obviously, I taught a little bit of class civ when I was training. I taught English as well. That's how I survived plugging my timetable with.
Right,
that's how it works in all schools, but particularly in the state sector. Yeah. You're not going to get a full-time job teaching Latin. I do agree, but also I think the way I have always felt is the gift that you're giving them by giving them a grounding in Latin and or Greek, if you're lucky enough to have that opportunity. To me, you're gifting them with such an advantage that, frankly, I don't think classical civilization at GCSE or A-level can compare to that.
I would entirely agree with that. I don't know. It's just an incomparable possession to have, really, I think.
It absolutely is, whereas I don't feel that about the other qualifications, much as I think they're interesting. But I just don't feel that you're handing them this gift in the same way that will open so many doors for them in ways they probably can't even imagine at this stage.
No, that's a very positive message, and I would entirely agree.
Do you have a particular philosophy of teaching Latin and Greek, or do you think there are merits to a variety of approaches?
Well, I mean, those can both be true, can't they? I mean, I do have a very specific view of it, but I don't, doesn't mean that I'd belittle or disparage other ways of doing it. I mean, obviously, obviously, I'm sort of broadly traditionalist, although I also think that you've got to start where students are. I mean, it's no good blinding them with science. I do think that understanding grammar properly is central, really, and also then that you facilitate that by as far as possible, concentrating on essentials and postponing and subordinating sort of minor irregularities and exceptions. And so traditional, yes, but also pared down and adapted to modern students, and particular with, I think, a sort of sense of priority. So, I mean, my criticism of many books, I think, boils down to lack of logical progression and also lack of light and shade. In other words, not building on things you've done already and drawing comparisons with those. People would ask, is it a reading course? And I mean, you feel like saying, well, what do you mean? I mean, obviously, it's a reading course in the sense that it's intended to get you to read Greek and Latin initially adapted and in due course, one hopes, unadapted. But if you mean by a reading course to give the illusion of reading from a very early stage, when you're simply glossing things that they can't possibly understand at that point, and all they're doing is putting it together like a jigsaw, then in that sense, no, it's not. Quite obviously, the aim with any course, however traditional, you know, you need to be reading a continuous passage as quickly as possible. But I try not to use things that as it were, they haven't done yet. So, you know, I don't gloss whole phrases of something that can't at that point be understood. So, so I guess that's a sort of philosophy in a way. People also used to say at that point when it was all at the planning stage, people used to say, does it have a continuous story? By which they usually mean a sort of story of everyday life sort of made up. And it, no, I mean, because there's so much good stuff in ancient authors, why have something banal made up by me? I mean, use the stories that are there in the ancient authors. And the idea that a continuous story keeps them interested, I mean, I'm not sure I buy that, really. I mean, I mean, what maintains interest is variety and new stuff. So
there is a continuous narrative, but it's a continuous narrative of ancient stories. So they do, yes, you do follow, yes, the story. Yes,
quite right. I hadn't really ever thought of that before in that, quite that way. But yes, I mean, it's the panorama of Roman history, and it is telling all these traditional stories from Livy, predominantly for the early period, and we hope giving them a slightly, I don't know, I wouldn't quite say a sort of ironic edge, but I mean, trying to find points of interest in them and make people think about, you know, modern issues that are raised. And that kind of would be a comment on the whole style, as I see it, of what we're doing, which is it's like a sort of tweaked traditionalism. But yes, I mean, the narrative of Roman history, and it is, you know, you don't have to believe that it's factually historical to be of interest.
But I think what's great about what you try to do in the Latin to GCSE is it is actually gifting students with, it's gone out of fashion to call it this now, but the cultural capital that is, was so much talked about. If you've come through a very deeply traditional prep school system, you've been imbued with those stories, whereas someone who's starting Latin ab initio won't have had that background.
No, that's a really interesting and good point. And you're quite right. I mean, an 11-year-old coming to Latin at first and meeting, I mean, okay, perfectly amusing story of everyday life, whatever. But I mean, there is a thing like, why should we be interested in these Romans? Or why not just have a story set in the present day, or indeed have it in English? You know, you've got to give a sense of why ancient cultures are important, I think. In that sense, traditional, yes. Yeah, another way in which I'm traditional is that I think the sort of analogy with modern languages is really sort of barking up the wrong tree for teaching classical language, really. I mean, I've nothing wrong with reading it aloud. I've nothing wrong with, you know, a bit of spoken Latin, you know, salvete, discipuli, sedete, you know, tacete, all that stuff. That's fine. It's the idea that I'm going to teach the ablative absolute in Latin. I mean, that is just bonkers, isn't it? I mean, it's hard enough to teach it in English. So that I'm skeptical of that, though. I know it has many devotees of it. Well, I mean, you know, each to their own. People go off to summer schools and, you know, speak Latin to each other for fun. I mean,
do they?
No, they do. But I can't say that asking people to pass the marmalade in Latin is my idea of fun. But, you know, one risk of it is that the classics sort of tries to be trendy by emulating modern languages, and only, in fact, then brings in things that the modern linguists ditched 15 years ago anyway.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting how convinced some people are of, like you say, trying to teach it as a as a living language, when we, you can't escape the fact that it is a dead language. And I've always said that's one of its inherent values.
Exactly,
because the way that you study it is so different. You can really get to grips with the bones and the sinews of how the language works, because you don't have to worry about all the things that modern linguists do have to worry about, which is communication, listening, all of those nuances, colloquialisms. That doesn't matter unless you become a specialist in, say, Roman comedy, for example. It's not going to matter for most of the time.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think what a great disservice is done to our sort of cause by people who are sort of embarrassed by or want to sort of gloss over what are the central attractions and features of Latin. And I mean, the idea that you can, inverted commas, read Latin by just skimming through it without any kind of knowledge of the grammar. I mean, that's just wrong. You've got to understand how it fits together to get the sense from it. And if you say, you know, grammar's not important, well, you might as well then say, well, if you think that, why do Latin at all? Why not just teach about Roman everyday life in English, which, you know, has a limited degree of interest? but no, we shouldn't be embarrassed by it's the virtue of it being not afraid to say that it being a dead language is essentially a virtue, an advantage. Latin is a building with the plumbing on the outside.
You're listening to the Latin Tutor Podcast. Stay tuned to hear more from John Taylor, who you can get in touch with via the University of Manchester or through the Institute of Continuing Education at Cambridge. If you Google him, you'll find the quite remarkable plethora of publications to his name. If you'd like to get in touch with me, as I'm not quite so famous, my website is latintutoring.co.uk. My conversation with John now turns to the current GCSE specifications and how they are served, or maybe not served, by the Cambridge Latin course. We then proceed on to the different challenges faced by the state and independent sectors, and beyond that, moving on to A-level.
Certainly in vocabulary terms, the current one, the sole one that also have, is not a very good match for the Cambridge Latin course at all, really. And that's one of the reasons why we wrote Latin to GCSE. I mean, the other thing, I mean, sorry, we could have had another whole hour on Cambridge Latin course. I mean, it has got many advantages and attractions, and it's got big drawbacks as well, I think. But apart from anything else, it's just too sprawling. I mean, it was designed as a five-year course, and at a time when people often had 5 years to O-level, and people don't nowadays. And when they reformed it recently, I mean, they put around a survey questionnaire, and I said, look, whatever else you do, you've got to cut it drastically down, and, you know, maximum three books. And they didn't. They made it four, which is it's still too much. I mean, nobody ever gets to the end of it.
No.
There was a lot of press coverage about the new edition, but it was entirely about, you know, the sort of political correctness, wokeness, if you like.
Yeah.
All these, you know, multiracial characters that were being introduced and things. Well, I mean, fine, very nice thing to do, but not a single word was said about how well it
about the pedagogy.
So one has mixed feelings about that, but I do think the book one, you know, the old book one is really a tour de force. And when in my very first job, I mean, we moved from Ecce Romani, which is really childish drivel, really, but I mean, we moved to Cambridge, and it really, the popularity of the subject absolutely shot up. Mm. You
know, I mean, book one is wonderful, though. What you were saying about vocabulary, in the last 10 years of my career, just completely ditched all the stages vocabulary, and I created my own knowledge organizer based on the GCSE, you know, a sort of pared down GCSE list. And so, well, this is where we're aiming for. So this is what we're going to start learning.
You're right. And you're quite right. And also the book two is a bit flat, and it's not. I've taught book two actually recently for the Classics for All. And actually, I thought, this isn't as bad as I thought it was. But what I was really going to say was that after the tour de force of book one, the sort of street cred factor, the sort of appeal to teenagers, really was at its height in book three with Modestus and his girlfriends and all that. And I mean, that material is wonderful and entertaining. Mm. But, and this brings me to a sort of different point, that the trouble is, by then, the Latin is actually very difficult. And And that's very interesting that traditionally, you know, the Cambridge Latin course would be criticised, as it were, from the right, saying, you know, this is not rigorous enough. But now it's criticised from the left. I mean, you know, like, this is too hard. and so it, you know, time moves on and brings paradoxes with it. But it is just too, even now in its newest form, it's still too big and not a good enough match for GCSE, really. And yet, I mean, it has about an 80% market share. I mean, I don't deny for a minute that if you've got people who are doing Latin compulsorily for a year, and most of them are going to drop it, and most of them are never really going to understand it anyway, if you're putting it crudely. I mean, it's the best way to keep them entertained for a year. Of course it is. Now, it has rivals now, doesn't it? Similar,
Suburani. It does, yeah. Because it has all the faults of the CLC, the excess, yeah. the prioritising narrative over the grammar, ridiculous vocabulary hurled at them constantly that they don't need. You know, who needs to know the Latin for parrot? You know, that's in there.
Well,
now. And so you're there going, oh, for God's sake, no wonder she can't do it. And also, my big problem with these types of reading courses is the excessive use of pronouns all the time, which therefore means the students never learn to focus on the verb ending, because they read from left to right, relying on the existing pronoun. You're like, this is not how to teach them how to tackle a Latin sentence. You're lulling them into the habit of just continuing to read from left to right.
Yes.
Which is actually the habit you need to break from day one.
Exactly.
And so I literally go through scrubbing them out on the screen. I said, right, take out all the pronouns rely on them.
At Tunbridge School, where I was for a long time, they're coming from prep schools, and they're coming from a wide variety of prep schools. I mean, some of the best have, of course, already done pretty much all they need for GCSE when they arrive at the age of 13. If they've done the sort of scholarship level or GCSE level stuff properly, there isn't actually that much new in terms of major constructions. I mean, you know, they might not be hot on the, you know, gerund divle attraction or something, but you know, if they've done the subjunctive and they've done the major types of clause, they have done it already, and so all you're really doing is refining, building on something. I mean, it's like you could say, like modern history. I mean, you know, you could ask a question like, I don't know, why did the First World War break out? I mean, you could put that on a common entrance paper, or you could put it on a finals paper at university, or you could write a 700-page book on it. I mean, the question's the same. It's just that you refine it, you add to it, you look at it from different angles. So in that sense, I mean, there isn't a huge amount of new grammar. It's just getting people to confident with things that they have seen before, but might not, you know, they haven't really taken it on board.
It's interesting what you're saying, because I've heard that Tunbridge deal very well with the situation that you're alluding to, which is the fact that you get lots of different students with extremely different backgrounds, some with virtually no Latin, and some who've, as you say, if they've done scholarship, that's beyond GCSE
in some respects. Yes.
But as a tutor, which is what I'm doing now, so I work with students from all sorts of different schools, I am horrified at what goes on in a lot of schools where you get a scholarship pupil who ends up in their final school and the school starts again with, for example, Cullen and Taylor, Ab Initio, Chapter 1, and they are bored silly for at least 2 years because no provision is put in place for them. And bizarre system, seems to me.
The top end, all the academic scholars at Tunbridge, we tried to put together in one set, so that would be about 20 boys. Those who'd done Greek already to a significant level were sort of hived off into another small set. But basically, all the academic scholars were started on Greek. So we used to do entirely Greek with that set until half term. And then we'd do half and half Greek and Latin after that.
I've been working in an 11 to 16 comprehensive for the last decade of my career. So Latin beyond GCSE came out after I stopped teaching A-level, annoyingly. But I've recently done a little bit of work with an AS student, and it really has made me think, how did we cope teaching Latin A-level prior to that? Because there really was nothing.
Well, it's very kind of you to say. I mean, I don't think I wouldn't really claim any kind of like monopoly of it. I mean, I can remember lots of books that we used at school. I think probably, though, I think probably we were using lots of different books. We were using like a book for unseens and a book for prose composition and so on. So, I mean, it was kind of intended as a sort of one-stop shop, really. I hope there was enough of everything in the book, at least to be a sort of core and not have to look too far. And also things like, you know, the sort of vocabulary for verse on scenes. I mean, that I thought was something that was going to be useful because, I mean, I don't claim any originality for any of it, really. I mean, but all the stuff's out there. It's in the public domain. You can find it. It's just that I was kind of trying to, well, as I say, make it into a sort of one-stop shop, really. I mean, that's particularly true of the Beyond GCSE books, I think, really.
I think so. But also, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, putting things in some kind of order. You know, so a new teacher, for example, I remember when I started teaching, and you were just left to get on with it. There was because Latin, you're so often on your own or just one other person. Where do I start? And so to have something where you think, okay, well, let's work through this. And the student I was working with is a victim of the pandemic, obviously, so she didn't really complete her GCSE studies. So we just worked through a lot of the GCSE material and the AS material systematically. And it was so fantastic to have that to work from.
Well, I'm glad it was useful in that way. I mean, I do, of course, try to start with some recapping of the GCSE stuff. And of course, also, I tend to say, you know, as you've already seen at GCSE, knowing full well that quite a lot of them, although they have seen it, won't really remember it. And so I do, usually try to put in a bit of a recap.
You've been listening to the Latin Tutor Podcast. Do join me again as I have two more guests to come in what remains of season 2. Huge thanks to John Taylor for being such a charming guest and being so willing to give me his time. I think I agreed with everything he said, and he agreed with everything I said, which just goes to show what a thoroughly intelligent chap he must be.